Merry Christmas and happy holidays, henchmen, and welcome back to the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villains Man, myself, JVD, as I attempt to traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artist in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. If you want to follow the podcast, do so over at Twitter at Deadly Kung Fu Pod, or you can follow me under the same name over at Mastodon. If you want to follow the Villains Man on social media, do so, and you can keep up with podcasts there, and you can follow me, JVD, over on Twitter, at JVD of TVD. I'm dropping an episode early this week for all of your holiday driving to give you something to listen to and enjoy as you're going to go spend holiday with your families this weekend. If you're new to the podcast, what I do is I go through continuity of Danny Rand and Shang-Chi. And usually I flip-flop between episodes on what's going on between both the characters unless there's a major arc that requires me to break it down in more than two episodes, because I try to keep episode at 30 minutes. So, if you're here for Iron Fist, it's set up pretty easily. All you gotta do is listen to the Iron Fist episodes. If you want to know about Shang-Chi, it's the same thing. All you gotta do is listen to the Shang-Chi episodes. So, but today, we're diving back into Iron Fist Volume 1 with issues number 6 and number 7 to further the plot line of the kidnapped Colleen Wing by Master Khan and her brainwashing as Iron Fist tries to save her. Now, we're going to cover two issues here, like I said, 6 and 7. And the first one here is called Deathmatch. The creative team for the story is, as it's been, writer Chris Claremont and the penciler John Byrne. The inks are by Frank Claremonte. The letterers are Gaspar Saladino and Karen Mantello. And the editor is Marv Wolfman. The cover for the issue is done by Gil Kane, Frank Giacoi, or Coi, I'm not really sure how you want to pronounce that, and Danny Krepsey. April 29th, 1976. At the Heathrow Airport in London, Danny thanks Alan Cavanaugh for his help over the past month. As he boards a plane, he is shocked to find a recovered Misty Knight with a new biotic arm awaiting for him. Accompanying her is a stranger who introduces himself as Jaren Hogarth, a client of Misty and Colleen's investigation firm Nightwing Restorations Limited, and more importantly, his late father's lawyer. He admits to keeping an eye on Danny since his return to investigate if he was truly the Meacham's son, but Colleen's kidnapping complicated things. After the rescue, he wishes to talk to Danny about his inheritance for his father's company. Seeing it was Jaren along with Misty who discovered the big lead to where Colleen currently is, our hero puts his faith in him. May 1st, 1976. As dusk approaches, Misty hands Danny Colleen Wing's sword wrapped in cloth and tells him it's important that she gets it. As the two share an emotional embrace, she apologizes for being angry with him and wishes him luck. With the clouds giving the plane cover from the full moon, Iron Fist paraglides through the dark skies of Helwan, taking out a Jarad al-Din guard as he begins his infiltration of Master Khan's fortress. As he silently takes out the guards, UT watches the young dragon within the Great Crystal from his study in Kung Lun. While dismissing the idea of warning his nephew about how formidable Master Khan can be, Li Kung bursts in to discover the rumors of UT's spy on Iron Fist are true. The Thunderer condemns him for disobeying the laws and that using the Great Crystal leaves the city open from an attack from the Hetheri. UT shoots back, questioning Li Kung about the laws and that how his son fled Kung Lun as a traitor. This sends the trainer into a fury, confronting the leader of the city about not telling Danny about his true heritage and that his father should have ruled, but his convenient death prevents that from happening. In turn, this angers UT, who commands Li Kung leave and that he should thank the gods that he's allowed to live this day. Back at the Jarad al-Din fortress, Iron Fist finds Colleen Wing, who immediately attacks as Angar the Screamer assaults him with a mind storm. Our hero does everything in his skill not to hurt his friend, but Colleen is too relentless. Iron Fist finally manages to grapple her and uses his chi to mend their minds together and break Angar's brainwashing. With Colleen unconscious and Iron Fist weakened, Master Khan's soldiers rush in to execute the living weapon. On to issue 7, titled Iron Fist Must Die. Creative team, once again, are writers Chris, pencilers Byrne, Ingers is R. Frank, and then our colorist, letters, and editors change with Bonnie Wilford, Joe Rosen, and Archie Goodwin on duties. The cover is drawn by Ron Wilson, Al Milgrom, and once again, Danny Krepsey. Before the scimitar can take off his head, not to be confused with the villain from the last episode, Iron Fist attempts to break free of the guards but is too weak to escape. As the blade comes swinging at our hero's neck, Colleen Wing leaps in to make the save with her unsheathed sword. Master Khan takes his leave, threatening to kill Angar for his failure. As Iron Fist gives chase, Colleen blitzes into action, taking out the guards to come face to face with the man who broke her. Angar warns Colleen that he can destroy her mind in a matter of seconds as she swings her sword at him. At first, the villain claims she misses, but as Angar sees his blood all over her unsheathed sword, he falls over dead. Interlude. It's an hour before dawn on the Sandara Plateau. Misty Knight practices her quick draw and is interrupted by Jaren, who invites her back on the plane for breakfast. She's concerned about Danny being gone most of the night and asks what happens if he dies in Jarad al-Din. Jared tells her that Wendell Rand's will states that the fortune goes to public charities and himself. This angers Misty, who threatens Jared on his life that nothing better happened to Danny while he's in the fortress. The lawyer calmly assures her that he has no doubts about her threat and that Danny can take care of himself. Back at the fortress, Iron Fist sneaks around searching for Master Khan and is ambushed by Kambala Bay due to his carelessness. The former bodyguard of Princess Azir jokes that she is not there to help Iron Fist like once before. Kambala is quickly proved wrong as the young dragon makes quick work of him, knocking him through the wall into Master Khan's sanctorium. As the two battle, Master Khan discovers that Iron Fist's chi is more than a match for his magic and forces the sorcerer to use the Crimson Bands of Sidorak to incapacitate him. The villain tries to barter with Iron Fist, saying he only wants his revenge against the King of Hawan and will give Danny what his heart truly desires if left alone. Then Khan opens a portal to the study of UT, taking the ruler of Kung Lung by surprise. Iron Fist struggles with the offer, which Khan realizes, forcing him to use his final trump card. He reveals to the young dragon he can have his real vengeance against the one who killed his mother and father by killing UT. To push Iron Fist into taking action upon his offer, he reveals his uncle's plot to ascend to the throne by driving the Rands from Kung Lun and killing them upon their return. UT is speechless about the accusation as Iron Fist is freed from his magical restraints and denies nothing when his nephew questions him about the truth. Warning his uncle that there will be much to answer for when they meet again, Iron Fist summons his chi to destroy the portal to Kun Lun, this causing an explosion of energy that rocks Jarad al-Din as a rip in the fabric of reality is open. Both Iron Fist and Khan hold on to dear life, but the vacuum proves too much for the sorcerer as it pulls him in before the terror closes in on itself. As dawn rises, Colleen Wing stands outside the ruined Jarad al-Din fortress, relieved to be free of Angar's mindstorm brainwashing. Iron Fist approaches, happy to see her, but that's not the case with her as Colleen is angry with him over the mind melding. She threatens to kill him over it, and Danny doesn't stop her, saying he didn't want to do it, but it was the only way to save her. Realizing her friend is right, Colleen follows him back to the plane to meet with Misty and Jared. This is pretty good little two-part story to wrap up a lot that's been going on from the beginning of Marvel Premiere here to midway through this Iron Fist Volume 1. And you really can't complain about it. This gives you a lot that you want as a reader if you're really involved and really obsessed with reading this series like I was years and years ago. And it's really good. Now, I'm about to take my little break as usual and play a podcasting promo from some friends. And when I get back, I'm going to dive into Issues 6 and 7 of Iron Fist.
If you're into all things comics, you have to check out Take a Knee for Marvel vs. DC, your go-to podcast for comic and superhero discussion, debates, polls, and more. Tune in as regular Scott and Ozzy Killmonger chat about your favorite comic topics, and you never know who may show up for an open mic or what will be next on their favorite One Gotta Go. Take a Knee for Marvel vs. DC, every Sunday, powered by the Defy Light Podcast Network.
And welcome back to the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villain Man with myself, JVD. We just finished the synopsis, or the breakdown, for Iron Fist Volume 1, Issues 6 and 7. Now, if you love Chris Claremont, which a lot of comic book fans do, this storytelling is right up your alley. I mean, this is at the time where he's starting to write X-Men. He's been writing Iron Fist before that. And this has everything you want from a Chris Claremont, a long, drawn-out arc. So, he started this back in the end of his Marvel premiere run with Iron Fist on issue 24 and 25. But with some of the stuff that we learned in this issue, it's actually been taking place since, like, issues 17 and 18. But, and it's great. Like, he finishes up this arc with Master Khan, and then you find out that it's been going on further, like I just mentioned, and he's also building up the subplot to UT's betrayal and the true heritage of Iron Fist in the background. And that is literally typical, you know, Chris Claremont writing. Now, my only complaint with this story is we don't get a whole lot out of Master Khan. It's the little fight between him and Iron Fist. It's pretty fast. It's like a one-page, eight thin panels, like four on the top, four on the bottom, and only five of them are just this little scuffle between the two. But we do learn that he's an accomplished sorcerer. And we see the flames of the Faultine and the Crimson Bands of Sidorak. So if you're a Doctor Strange fan, you know those spells. Those are something he's used quite often in his history. But we also see these bolts of Bishru, and I've never heard of these before. So I really got to looking up this entity or deity or whatever it may be because I'm not familiar with it. And the only information about the character or the thing, entity, whatever I could find was his name came up six times between 1973 and 1981. So I went through a couple of sites and looked. This is from the Marvel database. So it seems Bishru was a pre-cataclysmic Age of Atlantis deity or entity, circa 18,000 BC during the Great Cataclysm. Shabar was a priest and the guardian of his temple. So that shows that it's some type of creature or, you know, entity, and kind of goes back on what this says further. But Bishru's name was invoked by Kamu and shouted its name among other Atlantean deities as he died. And then I've learned that because the first time we hear of this character is during the Submariner series in the early 70s. Shabar survived, being a living skeleton who slew any who intruded on his domain until circa 6000 BC. Now, the baleful boats of Bishru, which I'm going to assume if I would have looked into more of the Doctor Strange books, I would have heard them called this, summons burning energy beams of mystical energy to attack opponents, most notably used by Master Khan, who I'm talking to, Doctor Strange, and Umar. And we do know they burn because Iron Fist mentions that they burn his body when he absorbs the energy in this book during their little fight. Now, for the notes, and like I said, this refers to him as a he, so we know that even though it says that his nature is unknown, it could be a non-magical being, it could be an ancestor or historical figure, or even a location. So we just know that it's not of location. So that's pretty obvious based on some of the information that we have here from the Marvel database. Other than that, there's this Marvel Zombies, almost like a reference book from, I think, the like late 2000s, maybe the early 2010s. And the name Bishru was in some of the notes that I found, but going through a breakdown of everything without looking at issue, I can never find anything about Bishru at all. So I just kind of gave up because little to nothing is known about the character. So I just kind of quit the research on it. But the thing about Master Khan is, even though they don't have this big grand fight, that's fine because a villain's greatest weapon against his opponents is knowledge. And that's what he uses to really get to Iron Fist. And he drops that bombshell to Danny about UT being responsible for the death of his parents on their journey to Kung Lung, which left him there stranded as an orphan for 10 years. And this is built up really great by Claremont in issue 6 with Lee Kung when he threatens UT. And then, because you know there's something there, and we've seen this being built up even as far back as the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu run with the Firebird saga, where we learn of Tuan being, you know, the father of UT and Wendell Rand. And then that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, the inheritance of being ruler of Kung Lun that Danny should have, but it's not really set in stone or known about or even said until here, and it's really good. And that's Khan's greatest weapon, and I love this. I think that's great. And what's crazy about this is this also helps develop the longevity of Iron Fist as a character with Marvel Comics, Because Master Khan states, and we all know this for the characters, the gateway to Kung Lun only opens up every 10 years. That's a decade, and we know Danny's already been on Earth for a year now. So unless by some magical means, which we see when Khan opens up the portal, or even some of the strange magic we see in the Firebird saga, if you can't get to Kung Lun that way, you literally have to wait every decade. So, and here's a crazy thing for longevity, is we know that in comic book terms, a year in comics could last 5-6 years in publication. So, you know, it could be a whole 50 years for Danny to even get to that point in publication, and here we are in the middle of the 1970s, so that does help give the character longevity. To finish up the arc, we get a rematch between Iron Fist and Kamala Bay, which in wrestling terms is a squash, and that's what it should be, and he makes pretty quick work of Kamala Bay. Then Colleen Wayne even gets her revenge against Angar, the Screamer. Now, we do know it seems like she cuts him across the torso, and I don't understand why she wouldn't cut him across the throat. Besides, you know, heroes don't kill, which is understandable. But as long as he's out of this book and he's back to being in Daredevil, no offense to Daredevil, I do love Daredevil, but I do not like Angar the Screamer. He needs to stay out of these books. And if anything, we know he's probably not dead. Every villain never stays dead in comics. And for him to be around as long as what he has since, I think, like, right after issue 100 of Daredevil, and then he's been into this book, yeah, he's going to be staying around. Now, we do get a new character introduction with Jaren Hogarth, not the hoary host of Hogarth for the Doctor Strange entity thing. But we do know he's a lawyer of Wendell Ram, and he's been working with Misty on making sure Danny is the legit child of Wendell and Heather Mitchum. Now, considering he's in charge of all the wealth Wendell built throughout his life for his family, this also explains why Danny survived in London for weeks or months, depending on how you want to see that. Check out the last Iron Fist episode I did in London without having any type of money, and it also explains how Misty was to be able to be in the hospital for so long and get a new bionic arm. It all comes together now. Now, the only crazy thing, and this is good writing too, is it's hard to tell if Jaren is a friend or foe based on the fact that, you know, he has all this money. Because here's the thing that lets you say that he's a friend. We know that it's mentioned that he helped Misty find the big lead to find Colleen Wing. But when Misty is worried about Iron Fist in the fortress fighting Master Khan and them because he's been gone for hours, she asks Jaren the question about what happens to the fortune when Danny passes away, and he says, you know, it goes to charity or it goes to him. And that kind of makes you think that maybe he is also trying to kill Iron Fist. So it's up in the air about the character and what's going to happen with him. But there's this cool part when she asks him about that, what's going to happen, and she threatens his life that if he's up to, you know, any villainy, that she's going to, you know, go bad on him. And he is cool as a cucumber during this. It's pretty great. And so she's kind of like in his face, hunked over the table. And she's like, you know, threatening him. And he's like, look, all I need to know is if you want jam or marmalade on your toast. And I thought that was pretty cool. I like that a lot. Now, there's a lot to discuss in this book with Danny Ranch Chi and what it's capable of. Now, first, there's this mind meld that we do with Colleen Wing. And that's kind of like a callback to Star Trek at the time. We know Spock is somebody who does some stuff like this. But as the two begin fighting, before Danny mind melds, it's so cool. I hate Angar. I've repeated this. I do not like Angar Screamer. But they do this cool thing with his mind storm. There's this main long panel. It's like 2/3 of the page, maybe 1/3 of the page wide. And inside this panel, there are some art panels of Danny's face distorting. And then behind it, when it leads off to the main part of the panel, it's all trippy and distorted and melted looking, and we see Angar's head in the background screaming while this brainwashed Colleen Wing is attacking Iron Fist, and it's really cool. And during him and Colleen's fight, the complete background of their fight is all the same thing. It looks like the colors are swirling together and dripping to give you the feel that Danny's being attacked with a mind storm while having to defend himself with Colleen. And it's a cool, cool shot, and I will post that on the social medias for the Deadly Podcast Kung Fu. It's really cool. Really like it. It reminds you of being on an LSD trip. Not saying that I have done LSD. Not saying that I won't ever do LSD. But, you know, based on what we see in entertainment, yeah, that's what kind of reminds you of. It's pretty cool. And then at the end of it, when Danny uses his chi to break the mind control on her, the brainwashing, it's even cool. We get this full page setup, and on the left side, it's like the history of Danny Rand by imagery. And on the left side, it's the same thing, but it's Colleen Wing. And in the middle, at the top, we have Iron Fist. Then we have Colleen below them. And then there's just like this, it looks like a small brain made of cloud. And then below it, the brain is bigger. But in front of the brain, like if you were looking at someone's face, you see Colleen Wing's eyes. And around her eyes are the black eyeliners of the Iron Fist mask to show that their brains have, you know, melded and they have learned everything they can about each other through this mind melding. And it's really cool. It's super fucking cool. I cannot explain enough about it. It's John Byrne's art to depict this is amazing, and that's why the guy's a legend. Now next for the chi powers, back in Master of Kung Fu Annual, which was the big, you know, first meeting between Iron Fist and Shang-Chi, we do see that magical bolts and energy attacks seem to have no effect on Iron Fist, and we get a lot of this with the Radon fight in issues 3 and 4, and that's radiation, so we see that magic also seems to not affect him. And the bolts of Bishru are absorbed by him. This is where we get the idea that they burn, which I referenced later. But they seem to have no effect on me through the flames of the Flatline, and that's why Khan uses the Crimson Bands of Sidorak to hold Iron Fist. Because he's not absorbing the magic, and much like when in the Master of Kung Fu Annual, he's blocking the magical bolts. So, and this is cool. Now, this is where things might get a little dicey with the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, because it's not clear if he breaks free of them with the chi, or if Master Khan is letting the spell dismiss, hoping that Danny will attack UT when he restrains him to show him and tell him what UT had been up to. But when he does, Iron Fist kind of has his hands thrown out like he has broke free, but it's not clear. So I'm going to assume that in that moment, his chi did actually break the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, because that's a fan in me. But knowing Master Khan, and like I said, knowledge is power of the character, he most likely probably slowly let the energy or the magical effect of the Crimson Bands fade away to make Danny feel that he's broke free, probably to scare UT. So that's probably what Claremont was actually really going for in that. Now, finally, and we saw this back with the ninja back in Marvel Premiere number 22. You can check out that whole story, episode 6. I love that story. With the power of his chi, he can destroy magic to some degree. And here we're talking about how magic has no effect on him and he's blocked magical attacks. Now, when he fought the ninja's pocket dimension that he was trapped inside to was tied to his being. And when Danny punched him with the Iron Fist, it destroyed not only him, but it destroyed the pocket universe and threw him out of it as it collapsed on itself. Now, here in issue 7, when he punches the portal, it disrupts the energy and the magic between the barriers, and the portal that opens up to Kung Lun from Earth collapses on itself, and it tears reality open. And that's pretty powerful for this street-level hero that's been tangling with, you know, heroes with, like, Shang-Chi and Spider-Man at this time. And, like, I got to thinking about it even in the Bronze Age of comics and before then. We know Marvel characters, sometimes their scaling was extremely off and around the late 80s and probably around Infinity Gauntlet. Like, Marvel really did a really good job of starting to really scale some of their heroes. Like, they dialed Spider-Man back a little. And I could see where they would, you know, do this with Iron Fist, but he does have things in the future that prove that he could possibly do this. Now, the only character I can recall off the top of my head doing this, I can recall Thor using Mjolnir to swing and rip open reality itself. Now that's a magical hammer enhanced by Odin, who's one of the most powerful characters in Marvel Comics. And here we're talking about a guy punching magic with his chi, his own spiritual energy, to do that. So, you know, is it outlier? Who knows, but it's still pretty cool. He's already done it twice now, so that does have to say something about the character. And it's Chris Claremont, so, I mean, it is canon, it has happened. So, but yeah, that's about it for the magical key stuff. Like I said, really cool stuff going on in this book. I really like it. Now, speaking of the ninja, Master Khan states it was his ninja who got Danny's vengeance for him. And I completely forgot that the ninja even mentions that Master Khan showed him how to use magic and whatnot. So, given the ninja's history and how old the villain was, this suggests Master Khan is much more older than your modern day sorcerer like Doctor Strange or like a Baron Mordo or a Victor Von Doom. So, he has to be old. Now, this is what's interesting, is I did cover Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. I kind of gave a review over that, and I mentioned that Wenwu calls himself Master Khan. And Wenwu, we know, is over 1,000 years old. So, here you go. You could add that up if you wanted to. Now, what's also interesting about this is this brings up how Iron Fist can get back into Kun Lun without waiting a decade. Because the ninja, or Death, he called himself Death, we know Khan gave him the sacred volume of Kali, or the Book of Many Things, depending on how you want to take that in that storyline, and that gave him ways to sneak into Kung Lung without waiting for the gateway to open up every 10 years, and if Iron Fist could somehow find that book, he could get his revenge if need be, and that also helps, again, with the longevity of the character. I mean, he's got to find this book after this battle that if I'm right, it was destroyed, but regardless, nothing stays destroyed in Marvel. There you go. Like I said, it helps with the longevity of the character. Now, here's something that's also interesting about Master Khan. And, you know, here recently I've had this problem with demolitionist explosive experts on the podcast because we've got three of them back to back to back. Now, Master Khan could also be chalked up to be Fu Manchu if you wanted him to. There's some similarities with the character. We know that they're extremely old. Even there's a silhouette of him with when Iron Fist is caught and hit the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, and he kind of looks like Fu Manchu. And even without the silhouette, he does literally have a Fu Manchu mustache. But he does say, and I quote, "I yearn for simpler times, my friend, when men fought as men should, with naked steel in their hands. I have no use for nuclear war or Megadeth." And we do know here in the past, during Masters of Kung Fu, that Shang-Chi's father, Fu Manchu, kind of wants the same thing. He wants simpler times, and he's tired of the modern technological age. So there are some similarities between the villains here in both these books, much like there is of the heroes, and that's pretty cool. Now, if Doug Minch and Claremont set that up like that, I don't know, and I'm going to guess they didn't, considering some of the stuff I've brought up with why weren't all these demolition experts the same person. Especially with Winston Neville and James Larner during Master of Kung Fu and Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. But still, it's pretty cool, and I do like Master Khan, the villain, and I hate to see that he's been sucked up in this vortex and we may never see him again at this point. As I wrap up this up, we're also going to wrap up in this story the subplot of Misty Knight's backstory about how she lost her arm. And this has kind of been brought up in issue 2. We see a little bit of it in issue 3 when Danny finds out that she actually lost an arm and it was actually bionic. And now that we know she's got one back in the storyline. But she said it shows that she was a cop and it looks like she's working at a bank. And there's a bomb and she throws a bomb and it explodes right when it leaves her hands and it tears her arm off. So when this is how she got her bionic arm. So we wrap up this subplot here. Now, what's bad about this, and it's not that Danny's naive, it just doesn't seem like he has any common sense when it comes to hurt people's feelings. Well, then, you know, he's been trapped in this mystical city for 10 years, and that's how he grew up in, and he probably didn't realize such a thing as that a bionic arm existed. But when he shows up, he's like, "Oh, Misty, hey, you're whole again." And she's like, "You know, you really have a knack for saying the wrong things at the wrong time." Because we can see that this still bothers Misty Knight. Now, how long ago it is between her losing her bionic arm, and now it's not clear, but we do know that she's older than Danny Rand, so it has not happened probably within the span of this story. So to say that it's been probably a year or so before then, it's possible. I guess I'm going to have to look into Nightwing Restorations and see when she started that and how long it's been in the Marvel Universe at this time of this book. Other than that, this is a solid ending for the Master Khan story arc that's been going on Iron Fist. And it's a very good beginning to what's going on with UT and how now that we know that he's responsible for the death of Wendell and Heather Meacham and Iron Fist is aware of that, you know, there's some good storytelling to come out of that for the future of the character. But I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up. This has been the Deadly Podcast Kung Fu, brought to you by The Villains Man. You can check out Deadly Podcast wherever you follow The Villains Man on social media or over on Twitter, and now Mastodon for the time being at Deadly Kung Fu Pod. You can follow me, JVD, over on Twitter at JVD of TVD. If you like the music, check out Kuro over on SoundCloud, and the song is called Rushing Tiger. But remember, guys, in the end, support your local comic book shops. Go pick up your books. It's Christmas. Support your guys that give you your books. They need money this time of the year for, you know, their own kids, just like everybody else. And keep reading comics, guys.